It's The Bill Murphy Show. A daily one-on-one 30-minute interview featuring people from all walks of life. Available daily at BillMurphyShow.com. And now, here's your host, Bill Murphy.
And this is your digital broadcast for Thursday, July 22nd, 2010. Brought to you, as always, by Lulu's Bait Shack. Fresh Florida seafood, gigantic fishbowl drinks, and live music. Lulu's in Beach Place on A1A in the heart of Fort Lauderdale Beach. And if you're listening from somewhere besides South Florida, you'll just have to make sure you stop at Lulu's next time you come down to Fort Lauderdale, Miami area for vacation. And it is, remember, tomorrow, another edition of Music Fridays. We do it every single Friday. If you have a band or you are a music artist and you want to promote your gigs, your albums, play your music live, and even if you're out of the area, you can do it over the phone, and we'll play your stuff in during the interview as well. Contact me at Murph at BillMurphyShow.com, and we'll get you set up for a Music Friday on a future edition. Today, it's almost a Music Thursday as we get into the music industry. With my old friend, I always say old friend by mistake. What I mean to say is longtime friend, Bruce Harmon, who's the owner of CD Heaven West in what city exactly? Margate or?
Tamarack.
Tamarack. Margate, Tamarack, Lauderdale Lake, same thing, isn't it? It's all.
Same thing.
It's all.
Just say Fort Lauderdale.
Greater Fort Lauderdale. Greater Western Fort Lauderdale. And the thing about Bruce's place, CD Heaven West, it's one of the last, you know, standing independently owned record stores. Think the movie High Fidelity with John Cusack, right? Is it High Fidelity or High Infidelity?
High Fidelity.
High Fidelity.
And it's funny because the first time I saw that movie and he's sitting on the floor with a pile of records, I said, that's my life.
Sure is. Except now it's a pile of CDs, you know?
Yeah.
But you do have a lot of vinyl in the store, right? A
lot of vinyl. And the vinyl section continues to grow.
Really?
Yes.
Even in these days. Now, that's something I would not have guessed. I would have thought it would be slowly phased out and replaced completely by CDs.
It has grown so much to where it is now that just this week I brought in a line of turntables in the store.
Wow.
I'm now selling turntables that plug into your USB port right into your computer. So now you can go from vinyl to your iPod to your hard drive.
Right.
With a push of a button.
Or put it on CD if you'd like. And
there you go.
If that's the only way you can listen in your car. Well, that's promising news. I mean, I know we're not going to go full circle and go all the way back to vinyl, but it's nice to know that it's still alive and well.
Very much so. As a matter of fact, every year there's a National Record Store Day. There's special releases.
What day of the year is that?
Don't put me on the spot.
National Record Dealer Day?
National Record Store Day.
Oh, that's awesome.
A lot of record labels release limited edition stuff just for National Record Store Day. There was some Beatles stuff issued on 45s
and cool
stuff of that nature. But the whole business of selling music is totally different from when I started in the business back in 77.
Okay, so if you started in 77, that's perfect because you have a comprehensive knowledge of how this all evolved. I remember buying my first record albums in 1976. In a little record store in Mount Vernon, New York, where I rode my bike with money probably that I stole out of my dad's pocket and purchased two albums. They were the first, and I'm going to have you do the same thing. I want you to tell me what the first couple of records you bought were. But on the same day, I bought Frampton Comes Alive and Queen, A Night at the Opera. And both on the, I hit a home, you know, a two-run home run that day, buying those two albums as my first two. And you know the thing about, I remember most about being a kid and buying records back in those days was you take the plastic off, you open it up, you pull the album out, and the smell of it was just so, it stuck with me the rest of my life. It's so nostalgic. It was such a part of the magic of it. And plus just the size of the album covers and the back and the insides and all the artwork that would be there. It was just, that magic is sadly, you know, it's gone since 1984 or 5 when CDs started hitting the market.
Totally gone. I mean, you've got your CDs, the artwork and the liner notes. They're shrunk down so small.
You can't even read them.
You just can't appreciate it.
No, you can't.
And like you said, you know, the smell. And every time you opened up an album, you got paper cuts on your fingers, unless you knew how to do it, you know, by rubbing it on your leg and stuff.
I was just going to say that the plastic covering, the best way to get that off was to rub it on your jeans on the edge so it would heat up and just easily open for you. So I don't know if a lot of people knew that trick.
That was a trick I learned when I was working at Peaches.
There you go. We worked at Famous Peaches. All right, before we go there, because that would be an interesting story too, go back to the first time you bought a record album, and can you remember what it was and where it happened?
Wow. Probably the first album that I owned, I actually won on a radio station in Albany, New York, and it was the first Firefall album.
Oh, okay.
So that was probably the first album that I won. Probably the first album that I purchased was probably, believe it or not.
A lot of probablys there, yeah. Bruce. I don't know. You don't sound too sure.
It was absolutely a Genesis album. It was either Seconds Out or possibly Trick of the Tail.
All right. Well, then you didn't do too badly there at all. And where did you grow up, and where would you have gone to your first record store?
I grew up in Albany, New York, upstate. And we had these little record stores around Albany. And my thing as a kid was listening to AM Top 40 radio and going to the store every week and collecting the radio station playlists. And that's what got me interested in the music business.
Wow, at a very young age, too.
Very young age, probably junior high school I started. And I was fascinated by it and looking at the charts. And then I would go to the store and buy Billboard magazine. And I got really into Top 40 pop radio.
Right, a lot of singles, a lot of 45s.
A lot of singles. I mean, I had the Archies, Sugar on 45, and graduated to, buying the Beatles' Let It Be in a picture sleeve. And I was like, wow, you mean they issue these things with picture sleeves and you can collect them? And then everything just...
Well, not to try to one-up you or anything, but I did grow up in suburban New York City. So I was listening to New York City radio stations as a kid. And the first album, I think, I'm not sure if it was before I purchased those two or might have been right about the same time, I won from 99X in New York.
99XLO, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Wow. Now, I never would have remembered XLO. Yeah. But it was Rock of the Westies, Elton John. They actually had a contest where you win the album of your choice.
Oh, yeah.
And they sent it to you in the mail. You didn't have to go to the radio station and pick it up. It was pretty awesome. And so at the time, Island Girl was a huge hit, and I was a big, geeky Elton John fan as a kid. So I said, Rock of the Westies, Elton John. And the guy was, okay. So I got it in the mail probably a week later. Pretty exciting stuff,
Very cool.
God, all these... Now it's coming back to me, some of the records I had as a kid, because obviously the difference is I would have been given albums at a younger age as gifts, but not ones that I purchased. Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, there was an album that he put out that had a mirror on the front of the album. Oh, God, I can't even believe I'm going there. As a little kid, I had this thing.
I'm not going there.
Well, I'm just remembering. I never would have remembered this if we didn't have this conversation. Fascinating. Okay, let's fast forward a little bit. You were a radio guy, and you were in radio for years. You worked with K102 back in the early 80s, and those of you who have been Floridians for a long time may remember that radio station until WSHE came along and became the king, or was always along, but it was pretty much... It ruled the day throughout.
In the last days, though, we were pretty close. We'd narrowed the gap.
A little bit, yeah. When you made She work harder is what
they
did.
Yeah, we did. We probably had as much fun, if not more fun, at K102 as you guys had over at She.
So simultaneously or before or during, that's when you kind of got a job at Peaches and worked there. What did you do at Peaches? Were you just behind the counter doing your thing?
Actually, the first record store I ever worked at was a small store in Davie by BCC called Hot Records and Tapes.
Barely remember that place.
Hot Records.
Davie Road.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
I basically learned the retail business working there. From there, I went to work for Specs, and from there, went to work for Peaches and was on the original staff of the original Peaches that was in North Miami on 167th Street. And I can literally tell you that, yes, it's true. Peaches stores were literally built on peach crates. A couple of months before the store opened, the whole staff got hired. We were in there working till 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, putting hundreds and hundreds of these peach crates together.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing.
Oh, you guys put them together yourself.
Absolutely.
And then slap that paper label on the edge on the outside.
The paper label was already on.
Okay.
But we had to put the slats on them and build them a certain way. And I can't tell you how many late hours we would spend weeks before the grand opening of the store just hammering away and building the displays. And literally, the stores were built on peach crates.
Right, that's awesome. So, and then people would buy those and keep them to store their records as well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I have a couple in CD Heaven at the moment. And every time someone who's been around for quite a while sees them,
they
beg me for them. I'm like, no, I can't get rid of
Not for sale. Sorry about that. Yeah. It's a shame that I didn't save them. The day that I discovered that the peaches on Sunrise Boulevard had closed was a very, very sad day. I'm thinking that was 2000, 2001 maybe?
Possibly.
Yeah.
But it was one of the last peaches stores because the chain had broken up and each region still had a couple of stores, but the one on Sunrise Boulevard was one of the last ones.
What killed peaches? You would have thought peaches would have been immune to the death of the independent music stores because they were just so world famous. And it wasn't just that CDs came out, because obviously you could buy CDs at Peaches. What was the reason that we weren't going crazy with iTunes and iPods at the time? But
I think, like a lot of companies in and out of the music business, mismanagement. A lot of people in the corporate offices, and you know, when you're dealing with a chain that's throughout the country, it's just tough. And I mean, you look at the Tower Records, you look at the Virgin Records, they're all gone.
Yeah.
You know?
That's sad. And there were the big giant Virgin record stores in New York City and one in Miami. And Miami had a gigantic one too down at 72nd, right?
And yeah, as a matter of fact, shortly after it closed, I didn't even realize it had closed. My wife and I were down there and we said, let's check out the Virgin. And we go and it's empty.
Unbelievable.
You know, we didn't even know it was gone. And we were like, wow.
So, okay, now let's get into the debate a little bit about the whole Napster era and the whole file sharing and peer-to-peer and all that happened. There's a healthy debate that's still alive today on whether that was the biggest blow to the record industry, or whether in fact it was helping to promote certain things. Let's say I got a hold of a MP3 of something that you otherwise would have never heard of, and I emailed it to you or posted it for you to download, and you got it for free, and you really liked it. Isn't there the safe argument that could be made that I'm helping to promote this music, and that you might actually go out and buy the whole album or the whole catalog from that artist if you heard it? I mean, was it helping as much as it was hurting, or where do you go on that debate?
Well, the answer to that, I think most people would say, yes, it helps to promote the artist. It helps to hopefully sell additional music by the artist. But what it boils down to is the artist is not getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you say to yourself, well, I made these mixtapes at home. I want to share them with my friends. Everybody's been doing that forever.
Yeah, we did it on cassettes when we were kids. Right.
But in the early days of Napster, that's when everything went awry.
Right.
And Lars, what's his name, from Ulrich, Metallica, he's responsible for really getting all these record labels on his side.
Yeah.
And it's mushroomed to the fact that if you're not paying for a song to be downloaded, then you're considered a thief.
Right.
In the early days, it was no big deal.
No, and you know what it is? It comes down to time. I think if you really compare 1978, you know, Bill Murphy sharing a mixtape of music with Bruce on cassette, think about the time that would take. I got to get my turntable out. I got to record it on the cassette. Now I got to pause the cassette,
right,
put the next record on, now neatly kind of hit the pause button and make sure I get it all same. God forbid the record skips and I don't have to do it over again. You're talking about a couple of hours process.
Absolutely.
Now you fast forward to 2002, 2003, 2004, and I could get 8 songs downloaded from you in about 2 minutes. Well, now you could do it in 2 minutes, but back then, even 10 minutes, which is, you know, a fraction of what you did before. So it was sharing, yes, but the method was a lot quicker, and therefore the problem got, you know, magnified.
Absolutely. And of course, with the downloading, illegal or legal, it's really, really cut into the sales of physical media, be it CDs, records, tapes,
right?
You know, what have you. And anybody like me that's got a CD store or a record store, we're feeling, you know.
I'm sure you are. And
we're feeling it.
I got to be honest with you. I mean, you know, not to say anything negative about it, but I'm really actually quite surprised that a store like yours is still open. And I'm glad it is, but I'm, you know, with everything that's going on, I'm surprised it is. Do you get around it by selling other items aside from records and CDs to stay alive?
Absolutely. I've been saying for years that I had hoped eventually we would be the last one standing. We pretty much are. For the past 2 years in a row, we've been voted by the readers of New Times as the best CD store in South Florida. But it's kind of bittersweet
because you're the only one.
Well, there's a couple of others left, but I can hold my head up high and say that, you know, the inventory that we have in the store is unsurpassed by anybody else's. And yes, to continue to stay alive, we have to evolve. And the way we evolve is to bring in other merchandise. We carry rock and roll T-shirts, Big Dog T-shirts. I'm carrying turntables. So I'm slowly getting into iPod accessories. We have concert DVDs, which I've been at CD Heaven for about 16 years, and it doesn't seem like it's been that long. I've owned it for almost six. And when I bought the store, we really didn't have a lot of concert DVDs, but I saw a niche in the market for that. So we gradually expanded the concert DVDs, and we sell quite a few of them. So you got to find your niche and specialize in it. And of course, selling the used stuff, we buy, sell, and trade.
Right.
And there's still a lot of people that have collections that have uploaded all their music onto their iPod or their hard drive, and now they have a place where they can sell or trade in.
Now, on paper, that whole process would seem like a losing proposition for someone like you. Okay, I've got maybe, you know, let's say I take 300 CDs and digitize them, put them in my iPod or in my hard drives. And then I go into Bruce's place and I trade them in or sell them to you for cash. With so many other people doing the same thing as I did, digitizing their stuff, how many people are coming in and buying that used stuff? Do you ever cringe when somebody comes in with a crate of stuff and you think, oh, wow, this is going to be something that I'll lose money on?
We don't buy everything.
Okay.
We buy what we believe we can sell and obviously what we believe we have a clientele for. There's plenty of stuff. I'm talking collections that I'll just say, you know, I can't use it. Just within the past week, somebody came in with a bunch of old country CDs from the early 80s, late 70s. There's basically no market for that stuff.
Well, not at your place, but there may be something that's in
Correct.
That genre that would be more suited for.
Correct. In where our store is located and with our clientele, it's just tough to sell that stuff.
Right.
Another strange example is you look at rock and roll from the 80s and you look at rock and roll from the 80s on vinyl. There's virtually nothing that was released in the 80s on vinyl that we sell for more than maybe $2 or $3 a piece. Most people don't want 80s rock, and if they do, it only goes for a couple few dollars. So if someone comes in with a crate of nothing but 80s rock and roll, Journey albums, Police albums, whatever, I buy them based upon what they sell for. So
right.
that's the other thing. Obviously, I'll pay accordingly. If you come in with something that's valuable and might be worth $50 or $100, yes, I will pay accordingly. But also, you know, condition comes into factor. So
right. Well, as you can tell by listening to Bruce, folks, if you're in South Florida, Broward County in particular, and you're thinking about, you know, finding out what your stuff is worth and at least, you know, checking it out, you can tell that Bruce has, you know, he speaks confidently. He knows the stuff. You know, after 16 years in the same location, the same store, you got to know that his knowledge is off the top of his head, he'll be able to tell you, you know, where the record was printed, what label it was on, what label it should have been on, and what it's worth. And you're going to be getting a fair assessment of your stuff if you go there. We've gone a long time in this without telling you where the location is. 8128 North University Drive in Tamarack. Well, we did mention that it's in Tamarack earlier.
And it's in the Sunflower Center. Very
the
important.
Sunflower Center. Now, that's north of McNabb on University. Is that where it is?
It's between McNabb and Southgate. If you're coming from the north, it's basically a block south of Southgate.
Gotcha. So quite a ways north of McNabb. Buy, sell, and trade. Now, along the way, did you have to kind of, I don't know how this original, well, I guess I could kind of guess how it happened, but how did record stores get involved with becoming head shops at the same time, too? I mean, was that something that you ever felt compelled to do or you had to do? And what's the state of that situation now?
Very interesting question. A lot of independent record stores got into selling paraphernalia, if you will. Back when I started in the business in 77, the reason for bringing in the paraphernalia was the incredible markup. I mean, just crazy
money.
So
you'd buy something for $1 and sell it for $16 or something.
Yeah, it's crazy. Oddly enough, what you may or may not know is a new law just went into effect July 1st.
Wow, what a timely question that
was,
huh?
And you probably have no idea what I'm going to say.
I had no idea.
But as of this past July 1st, it has become illegal to sell glass pipes in the entire state of Florida.
Wow.
Unless the business that is selling them can prove, if they have to, that 70 or 75% of their business comes from the sale of tobacco.
Ah.
So there are...
Wait a minute. 70% of this tire sales of the entire store?
Yes.
Oh, so forget the record stores being able to do
it
then.
Okay. Absolutely. A couple of the paraphernalia shops around town, one of them in particular, has basically quit selling smoking accessories because of that. So once again, you got the local government officials deciding, you know, just not what we want in the state of Florida.
I guess kind of a good thing if you think about it. I mean, you know, it's kind of cleaning up the street, sort of. But at the same time, I'm wondering if it's a good thing. It may be a little too late to turn things around, but, you know, turning record stores back into record stores instead of, you know, head shops and having that stigma attached to them, you know, maybe clean up the whole scene, and maybe a record store might be a more family-friendly place to go now.
Well, the one thing about CD Heaven has been that it's always been family-friendly. We hear from customers all the time that find us, come in for the first time, spend some money, and they wind up talking to me or my employees and say, you know what? This takes me back a number of years.
Right.
And just to be able to come into the store and talk to knowledgeable people about music for minutes or hours on end, you don't have that when you go online and you buy something.
Oh, of course not.
You know, as far as CD Heaven goes, you can listen to basically anything you want in the store. And as someone recently said, hey, if you go to CD Heaven, there's no iPod app needed to figure out the name of a song. All you have to do is ask Bruce or one of his employees.
That's true. You don't need SoundHound while you're there.
Yeah.
The other thing about that is that since you've been in the same location for such a long time, the smell is there in the store. The old record smell.
Oh yeah,
is definitely there.
You walk in, more often than not, we've got the incense burning.
Yep, the atmosphere still exists if you go to CD Heaven.
CD Heaven is similar to Cheers. We have customers that have been coming there forever, and it's, you know, the place where everybody knows your name. And if you've been a regular customer of CD Heaven and you walk in the store, myself and my staff, we know exactly what you're interested in, and we'll say, oh, have you heard this, or, you know, whatever. So you get the personal service, and we'll tell you exactly the way it is. If you've got stuff you want to sell or trade, you know, most stores will just say, all right, this is the price, that's that. You know, we'll tell you the reasons for it, whatever, you know.
I can't tell you how many times I've been in a record store, and while I was browsing, sort of aimlessly, because I don't know, there's so many times that I just went to a record store, not even having a record on my mind, just going and browsing. And while I'm in the store, I hear something that's being played in the store. get incredibly curious, ask the guy behind the counter what they're listening to, and buy that record. So I think this is it's an awesome, magical process that's happened in stores. So with that in mind, and I know what I'm talking about, how do you go about deciding what stuff you're going to play in the store for people to listen to? Is there any science behind that, or do you just play what makes you happy?
It's a little bit of both. We're there all day. We want to play what we enjoy listening to. But if someone were to walk in the store that has been a customer for a long time and I know they're into a certain genre of music, I will probably, if I've got something I think they should hear, I'll immediately put it on and see what they think of it. And
see, iTunes isn't going to do that for you. And,
no.
And even the few remaining record chains that are out there, nobody there is going to do that
for
you.
No, you go to the mall stores and you ask a musical question of the employees, and 9 out of 10 times they're not even going to know what you're talking
right.
about. Along these lines, I had something very funny happen to me within the past year. Guy walks in to CD Heaven. There's a song playing. I don't even remember the name of the song. And the next thing I see is he's holding his phone up in the air. And I looked at him and I said, I got to ask, what are you doing? He goes, this is the most amazing app that I've ever come across. You can be anywhere you want. And if you hear a song and you don't know what it is, and you have this app, you push a button, you hold it up, and within, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 seconds, you look at your phone and it tells you the name of the song, the album cover comes up,
the year
name of the artist,
out,
and all that stuff.
The lyrics.
Everything. And I just looked at him and I said, great, nobody's going to call me on the phone and say, hey, I heard this song and it goes like this, blah,
oh,
blah,
yeah.
blah, 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 blah. You know, you don't need me anymore.
Yeah. I know. And you know what? It's amazing that there's a couple of them. Shazam is out there. And then this other one, Midomi Soundhound, which is the one
Shazam.
I use. And Soundhound, I've noticed, I've tested it out in some places, even though I was in somewhere where I knew the song. I spent a time in a nightclub a few weeks ago with a couple of friends, and song after song that the DJ was playing, we all knew what the songs were, but we were having a what year did it come out contest. So this would tell us what the year was. But the amazing thing was, even above all the ambient noise of the people in there, conversations happening 3 feet away that are really loud, it still extracts that music out from all of that noise and still can determine what it is. And I know it has something to do with waveforms and you know, reproducing the waveforms and then comparing them, but it's still...
You gotta love the new technology, but boy, does it take the personal touch out
yeah.
of everything in everyday life.
It sure does.
You know?
So how can you work with iTunes? Yeah, I'm a big iTunes guy, and I don't spend a lot of time downloading any illegal stuff, even though I know exactly how to do it. I've been shown how to do it. I could go out and buy a hard drive for $150 right now and put 3,000 songs on it for free in a matter of one night. I don't do that out of principle and because I've been in the industry for years. And if I hear an album that I really like, I'll go and I'll spend the $9-$11 on it on iTunes. How can you make that work in your favor? Is there anything you can do in your store to kind of play along with iTunes? Have you thought of selling iTunes gift cards? Does Apple cooperate with you guys at all, or did it just completely distance themselves?
To be honest with you, it hasn't really been an area that I've pursued. It's kind of a tough.
You're thinking
area.
About it, though, aren't you?
Well, but you have to try to stay one step ahead,
right.
And to keep your doors open.
Yeah.
Stores like mine are absolutely stores that are now selling a niche item, but there are still people that want records, they want CDs, they want to be able to hold it and touch it.
Yeah.
And strangely enough, you'd be surprised how many young people, and I'm talking kids in high school, maybe even in junior high school, that come in and they love to go through the dollar and $2 bins that we have, and they'll pull out a Journey album for a buck or two or whatever. And I would say to them, you guys have a turntable? Oh yeah, my dad gave us his turntable or whatever. And they're fascinated, and they all say the same thing. There's nothing like the sound of vinyl.
No, no.
And granted, most of our business comes from the CD side of the business, but it's been about 3 years since we expanded and put vinyl in the store. And now we have people on a regular basis that come in once a week or every other week just to go from A to Z and flip through the records.
Wow, that's great. And these USB turntables that you now you're offering to customers, do they really capture the full vinyl sound? Because I know part of the sound that people talk about that records give you that CDs don't is a lot of it is harmonic, you know, feedback, and it's also the rumbling of the turntable in whatever room it is and whatever surface it's on. A lot of that is a lot of fall space. So I'm wondering if, and I'm getting very technical here, but I'm wondering if the USB turntables still capture that sort of low-end rumble that we're used to from records.
Yeah, they do. You still feel and hear the warmth of you know, a record being played. However, once you upload it to your hard drive or your iPod, you may lose something unless you tweak, you know, the bass or the treble.
Sure.
But yeah, even if you don't hook these turntables up to your computer and you just hook it up to your stereo, it's
well, there you go.
It's a great turntable and it's very affordable, and we expect to do well with them.
Excellent. This is CD Heaven West, which is now, why CD Heaven West? Is there or was there ever a CD Heaven East?
Yes, there was, and it used to be on Commercial Boulevard down by Dixie. I didn't own that.
Okay.
But one of my best friends at the time owned both of the CD Heavens. He had sold the East location at basically the same time about 6 years ago that I bought the West location from him. And the East location closed about 4 years ago.
Okay. So we just hang on to the CD Heaven West name. Old CDs never die. They just go to CD Heaven. 8121 North University Drive in Tamarack, Florida.
8128.
Sorry. The eyesight's failing me even with the reading glasses on. You can reach Bruce at 954-726-7402. If you call there, tell him you heard about it on the Bill Murphy Show. We're going to make Bruce part of the show, and we will be mentioning CD Heaven West on our Friday show. So please do us a favor, and when you go in there, tell them that the Bill Murphy Show sent you, and go see Bruce. Bruce, welcome aboard to the show, man. It's good to have you here.
Thank you, my old friend.
Old friend. I've been making a habit out of calling my longtime friends my old friends, but I know you know exactly what I mean. So,
and let me just say, if they come in and they mention the show, I will do something special for them.
Excellent. Ilya, give them something as
absolutely
a keepsake, or take some to give them a nice discount. And stuff,
absolutely,
the Bill Murphy Show discount. We appreciate that because we really want to keep track of the feedback of how this works and if it's actually turning into business for you. And I really wish you the best of luck. I hope you're around for another 16 years.
I do too.
Selling and whatever form of media it is that we're doing at the time.
That's,
you know,
it. And let me give out the email address.
There you go.
cdheavenwest@bellsouth.net.
Simple enough. There you go. That's how to get in touch. Any questions you have about records? I know Bruce also on the side takes care of selling some of the collectibles and really, really valuable stuff on eBay. So there's a whole nother process that goes on as well. So if you're a music enthusiast, record enthusiast, collector, you got stuff that you want to buy, sell, or trade, get in touch with Bruce at CD Heaven West. We really appreciate you coming on the show today, man.
Thanks, Bill.
Tune in again tomorrow for another edition of another Music Friday. Not going to tell you who it is yet, because we're going to leave something to be, leave some mystery to it right here at BillMurphyShow.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we just surpassed the 100,000 hit mark, so
congratulations.
Thanks for all your help, y'all, your loyal listeners. Catch you tomorrow.
Log on each weekday for another edition of the Bill Murphy Show at BillMurphyShow.com. If you'd like to be a guest, send an email to murph@BillMurphyShow.com. That's M-U-R-P-H @BillMurphyShow.com. A Murphonics Media Production.